Coppell's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Welcome to the Worcester Report, a program of stories, Christian devotions, and music. Broadcast on CWCP, Coppell's Western Cape Radio.
South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God.
Welcome to the Worcester Report on CWCP Radio. This is Tony Coppell. You know, we've been going nearly 2 years, and today's interview is with the same person who was on our very first show, Dr. Mella Davies. She's going to be giving us the vision for a rebranding of her school, Masterpiece Academy. After you've heard that, you may be interested in some excerpts from that time, as I say, 2 years ago, when I interviewed not just her, but a couple of the students in the school, Umpo and Kanyo. We have for you Chapter 10 of Legacy, entitled Launch of a Generational Business Chamber, The Struggle to Significance Journey of a Business. We may have time for some music at the end of that. I don't really know, because as I speak here, we are undergoing load shedding, which should stop in time for me to finish producing tonight's show. So let's get on with our first interview with Mella Davies. Previously, on the first Worcester Report on the 22nd of February 2018, Dr. Mella Davies. And here we are, almost 2 years later, and she's back in the hot seat. And I'm so delighted. I couldn't believe it was that long, but that's as long as we've been running these programs now, folk. And during those 2 years, Mella, you've been my school principal, and I've taught science and music, and Lorianne has taught art in your school, and it's been really good experience, and we've had a lot of fun doing that. And so welcome to CWCP Radio.
I'm really pleased to be back. Thank you.
I don't know if you remember, but on that first program, also interviewed Umpo and Kanyo.
Oh, yes. Oh.
And I may just put a little bit of that into this program as well.
Oh, that would be sweet, yeah.
Anyway, this is big news. This month, you're planning to reboot Masterpiece Academy with a different flavor. Tell us about the new Masterpiece Academy.
Well, the Lord has really birthed in my heart a unique approach to doing school. A Masterpiece Academy will be known as Masterpiece Academy and Resource Center, and with a view to helping parents, teachers, or anyone who is wanting to learn or teach children to learn more effectively. What I felt was that we were able to help a small number of children. At its greatest attendance, Masterpiece only had 7 children. And that allowed for us to really be one-on-one and give quality attention. But I felt that the Lord wanted there to be a greater impact, which could only happen if parents and teachers and caregivers were taught how to teach. That would then multiply the reach of Masterpiece Academy. And I could see that the Lord was blessing this endeavor. Osborne Books sent us probably the equivalent of over $1,000 worth of resources. And I chose the books based on everything I'd seen in the last 3 years of running Masterpiece Academy, where the children struggled, whether it was with telling time or being able to remember multiplication tables, if they struggled with handwriting, wherever I saw a gap. This is the type of materials that I requested from Osborne Books, and they kindly sent those things here to South Africa. And the Lord then laid, in addition, on my heart literacy. Inevitably, we all encounter a period of time in our academic careers, so to speak, where we have teachers who just, for whatever reason, due to illness or a lack of morale, they don't teach or can't teach. Then what does a child do? Well, unfortunately, this is the circumstance faced by many students today in South Africa. But if a child can read, you can teach yourself anything. You can teach yourself science. You can teach yourself astronomy. You can teach yourself chemistry, any type of science. And the key becomes you unlock your own potential. One might be gifted in mathematics, but that natural inclination or ability will remain untapped because one cannot read. But if you can read, you can unlock any material or subject matter that you have an interest in. And so that is at the heart of the new part of the program that's called LIT, Literacy, Intervention, and Training. And the Lord's favor is on us. This Saturday, I met with the Cape Town director of Learn to Read, and we're actually going to be working together. It was divine alignment, perfect timing. The organization has over 100 volunteers, over 60 professionally trained tutors, and they're based in Cape Town and Joburg, and they're now coming to Worcester. Yes, they've chosen 3 schools already to start their pilot program, and they focus on students that are in the middle, not the high-performing students that get 5 to 7, or the low-performing students, which is where we were at. We were getting all the students who required remediation, but they're dealing with the students that fall in the middle. The program requires that a teacher choose a student to participate, and it's a pull-out program. Twice a week, the students are pulled out, and they are given reading skills, improvement and enhancement strategies. So again, this was just, again, another example of the Lord saying, you're on the right track. This is the way, walk in it. So the vision for Masterpiece Resource Center is to be an open place where kids can come and read. So my plan is to take all of these books, as well as any books that are donated, such as classic children's literature, Anne of Green Gables, Pippi Longstocking, that kind of thing, and have readily accessible to the kids to just read. And I am starting a read aloud program with Bollyland Creche. I've gone across the street, and it's still in the formation stages, but it's my goal to pull kids ages 3 to 5 once a week and read to them for about 20 or 30 minutes. And then to try to encourage parents to also read aloud to their children. I was shocked to learn that there was something called the Read Aloud Revolution. I never realized people stopped reading to their children. But obviously, with the books and everything that have come out, yes, people have stopped reading. And of course, all of the research shows that a child that is being read to and is reading progresses much further than a child who cannot read. And I've been astonished that I have seen children age 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, who simply cannot read or not reading on level. Those who read write well. You have a more fluent vocabulary, which then opens up other doors. So the goal is to begin this process of reading to the children and then impart that same kind of strategy at home, which leads to the other part of what's happening at Masterpiece. So as the Lord has given me this vision for literacy intervention, He also gave me the ability to write, and I started writing stories again. And so it's my heart also to work with other organizations. I've been contacting them, EduFunzi, Room to Read. There are various organizations that look at getting literature in the native tongue to children. So my goal is to write Bible-centered, God-centered children's books and then have these texts translated into Xhosa, Zulu, and then distributed by these various organizations. So that's one part of the new thing that's happening. This real emphasis on reading, on getting strategies for reading in the home. The other half of it is empowering caregivers, teachers, and the students themselves to teach themselves or to teach others. Just because one has a desire to teach doesn't mean one can do it. Okay, I know Oscar Wilde said that those who can do and those who don't teach, but that is inaccurate because according to 2 Corinthians, teaching is one of the fivefold ministry gifts. And if Holy Spirit doesn't anoint you to do it, my friend, you can't do it. So that being said, what we can do is say, Lord, facilitate through me. Okay, I don't feel that I'm anointed to teach. Let's say that's what a parent is saying. But you already have that position of authority. And if you're a parent, you have the command because God told the Israelites, teach your children when they're walking in the way, when they stand up, when you sit down, you need to talk to them. That kind of interaction needs to happen. What has happened generally is that the parent drops the child at the schoolhouse. And they expect that the 6 hours that the child is at school, everything that the child needs to learn is being dealt with by the teacher. That's simply not the case. It just simply cannot happen. Most schools are overcrowded. Even if they aren't overcrowded, you're going to have discipline issues. If you don't have discipline issues, you're going to have remediation problems. Not every child is going to be on the same level. Given these factors, it is almost impossible for a teacher to cover the material that needs to be taught. Especially, remember, if your child has started at school at the age of 6, we've had some pupils, which you can testify to, who didn't even know how to hold a pencil. By the time you teach them to hold a pencil, to recognize their alphabet, all things that should be part of school readiness to begin with, they're even further behind. They've already lost a year or two because most in American schools, you can go to school at 3 or 4, at least half day. And you definitely have to be at school by the age 5. So if you actually start at age 6, you've already lost 2 years. And then if you start and you're not school ready, you're even further behind because no one really has the time to teach you to recognize the alphabet, how to write your name, how to count. Where do you live? I remember having students, I love them dearly, but had to say, you live in the city of Worcester, in the province of the Western Cape, in the country of South Africa, in the continent of Africa. And keep drilling that. When I went to school, I already knew I lived in the United States. I lived in the city of Rosenberg. I could tell you my phone number. I knew my house address. I could spell my name. That was considered part of school readiness. So part of my hope, I know I would love to be able to teach every child. I'm one person. You're one person. We can't do it. But if we can empower people and say, listen, especially like with Bully Line Crest, they've got 90 kids that are not in school yet. Then I can say to the parents, in addition to reading to your children, before your kids make it to first grade, they need to be able to spell their names. They need to know what their phone numbers are. They need to know where they live. They need to be able to count from 1 to 10. They should know the alphabet. Don't imagine that the teacher is going to be able to do that. You need to do it. So we're talking about a revolution of parents taking responsibility and then also the child, because sometimes there aren't parents in the household. Then if you can read, if I can show you a strategy to read and get you reading, then you teach yourself anything. If the teachers go on strike, that's not your problem. You got your textbook, go right ahead. That is what we're looking for, where people begin to take responsibility for their own learning, where not the parent or the student puts the onus on a teacher to do something. God, we want them to do it, but just in case you don't, I'm not going to be behind the eight ball because I can read. And so that's our heart. So what we're also offering is a different way of doing school. Because there are two groups that fall into the crack. If you need remediation, forget it. You're out of luck. And if you're actually quite gifted, you're also out of luck. It takes too much to remediate, and then people think the smart ones will get it on their own. They're out of luck as well. What Masterpiece Resource Center then offers is something for the inquisitive child. Have you ever wanted to know how to do science labs? That's one of the beautiful things about the science program that Dr. Wiley created. Every lesson, there's a lab to show you how it works, which doesn't happen typically in classrooms here. Then you can come and we can show you how to do the labs. We can show you how to understand science, and you empower yourself. Do you have a love of languages? Then I can show you the way the Lord taught me how to learn languages, at least the Romance languages. Do you want to write? You have a gifting in writing. We can help you with that. Or we can help your parent help you with that. And then the goal is that it's exponential. Then we train people how to do science, and then they go on and train others. And then I talked to you about this cooperative method of doing school, which has been in place in the United States for years. Parents who've wanted to do school differently have banded together. And then they would say, well, we would like our children to have drama, but none of us have any drama or theatrical training. Why don't we pull our financial resources together and pay someone to teach us drama? And this is what we're trying to do at Masterpiece. We have been blessed for the last few years to have Nikki Robbie of Play Kids teaching drama. She not only does elocution, but she also deals with fine and gross motor skills, core development of the body. She's just excellent. But not everybody is able to have Nikki come and teach their child individually. She's willing to teach a group of five students to give the same quality instruction she gave to Masterpiece Academy student to somebody else's child, or even 10, or even 15, or 20, then the price dramatically decreases when you band together. You don't know how to teach science? Come to Masterpiece. Then we have our wonderful science teacher, Mr. Tony Koppel, can show you how to teach science. And then we keep that ball rolling. And we band together so that everybody gets a quality education, not a select few. Because really, every child has the right to read and the right to learn. If a child cannot read and is not being taught, then they're being cheated. And that really is not fair. So with this idea, Masterpiece Resource Center runs almost like a university of sorts. If enough people say that they're interested in a course, we'll offer it. If somebody's interested in rhetoric, we'll offer it. We've got Abacus. Enough people say that they want to know how to do math in their head without counting on their fingers, we offer it.
Now, are you talking there about offering a course to the homeschooling parent or to the children?
Both things are available. Abacus, the drama, those courses are geared directly toward the students. But we also have a part of the program which is directed toward the parent. We are being blessed. Rachel and Andrew from England are coming back in April for the express purpose of helping parents be able to help their children to do homework, to understand what's going on in the classroom. So we're going to have the dual aim. We're open to providing courses for children who want a greater sense of responsibility for their learning and want to grow in taking responsibility for learning different subject matters perhaps they haven't been exposed to or have weaknesses. But we're also saying to parents and administrators and teachers, if you don't know how to teach this lesson, give us a call. We'll help you. If you have a classroom that nobody seems to want to read a book, give us a call. We'll help you. If you're struggling with getting students to be able to write essays, give us a call. We'll help you. I remember going into a junior high, and the assignment, I was substitute teaching that day, and the assignment that the teacher had left were for the students to write short paragraphs. And I remember one child using the number 4 and drawing pictures. It's to the wedding words. It's like, what is this? He's like, it's my essay. I'm like, no, you can't use the number four for the word for. You can't use an ampersand for the word and. This is not writing. So even in the States, you have this kind of disconnect. If somebody doesn't stop and say, sweetie, this is not how you compose an essay. This is how you compose an essay. It requires a thesis statement. You must have something that draws the attention. You must have something that ends, a concluding statement. These are simple ideas that people who have been taught well take for granted. But these are things that can be taught, and it will make a huge impact on people's test scores. That's one of the things I've tried to tell. I've been invited to come to various schools here in Worcester. And I've told people, at the end of the day, the state is only interested in one thing. That's success. They don't care how you got it. Obviously, you can't cheat and take the test for the children. That's not what I'm saying. They don't care how you get there, as long as it's not illegal. They're interested in the final result. And that's what I saw in the classroom with myself. I would make my students write and write and write. And they would get irritated. In fact, they would say to me, you know, Dr. Davis, we're doing more work than anybody else in this school who is in the same grade and the same level. And one year I agreed with them. And I went down to talk to Dr. Fondon. I said, Dr. Fondon, is there any way that these kids who are just on a general level can be given honors credit? Because, I mean, I have worked them. And she said, no, Dr. Davis, there's a certain PEAMS number and that can't be changed. So I knew that I was requiring more of them than other people. But in the end, I had students come back to say to me, I would have lost my football scholarship if you hadn't taught me to write. Other people failed English, freshman English, but I passed and I kept my scholarship. I was mad because you made me write, but I am glad. So the demand for excellence, I think when teachers see that a group of students or a group of parents are saying, come up higher. We want our children to learn more. We want our children to go up higher. Then you're going to get excellence. You get what you expect. I expected excellence. I got excellence. My students always outperformed what their levels were. We can do the same thing here. In this case, we're asking administrators, teachers, and parents to come up higher. I know you've worked a long day. I know you may be tired, but pick up the phone or send an email and say, can you come and teach me? Can you help me? And then when there is an atmosphere of excellence, everything gets better. When there's an atmosphere of mediocrity, that is what you get. But when there's an atmosphere of excellence and a desire for excellence, everybody rises up higher.
Now, imagine the comparison, therefore, between what has happened in the past in Masterpiece, where we've had 5 days a week school, regular hours, into this transition. Is this future Masterpiece going to operate courses on an ad hoc basis when there's a particular demand from a group of parents, either for themselves or for their children, and then you will set up a course for that particular purpose? Is that the idea?
That is exactly the idea. The Masterpiece will no longer be running from 7-something in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Fridays, January through December, like a regular school. Instead, what will happen is there's a list of courses that are available for people to take, and then when there are enough students, then the classes will meet. So if there are 5 students, then we will have a drama. If there's, 5 students, we'll have abacus. That's kind of the cap that I put on it. We want to be able to give students quality attention and also use and reserve our energy so that it is basically not, for lack of a better word, wasted. So if we've got 5 parents who decide they want to be able to teach science, that's great. We'll do it for whoever wants to learn. Because it was a real blessing to be able to teach the children day by day, but there was no opportunity for growth. in terms of being able to share the kind of quality instruction that we were giving to those five or six or seven students. Now we can share it with five teachers or five administrators or five parents. And let's say that parent has three kids. Already we've begun to multiply the impact of the vision that we have for quality education for everybody. And a part of that is also the reading program. You know, there'll be hours in which the building will be open and we have a library and people can come in and sit and read, either read to their own children or a child can read himself. I've always operated a library, but I've only operated it for my girls from Avian Park.
Now, in the States where you come from,
yeah,
homeschooling is producing remarkable results. I mean, they are beating out the conventionally taught children. I don't know if that's the case in Worcester, but I do know there are quite a lot of homeschooling parents here who are attempting to do everything themselves. They will teach every subject. Yeah. That, from what you're telling me, that's not the way to go.
No, it is not. It is not. First of all, you're going to burn yourself out. Even with me, and I mean, I hold multiple degrees, and I got to the place where I would, whenever I could take something off of my plate, I took it off. I'm fluent in French, but when Priscille Farr was here, I didn't teach French. I could teach Spanish. You know, I got rid of it. Whatever I could take something off, just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. It was much better for me to do social studies and English. Concentrate on those two, leave math to Janie Deventer or Rennell and Chantal with Abacus. It was, you know, I didn't touch science. Do what you do well. And I would say that to what is it that you enjoy? Because you want the child to have a positive experience while you're teaching him or her. So it's best to teach what you enjoy teaching and leave the rest to someone else. That way the child does not associate bad feelings and learning with you. That's not good. So, I mean, I always tried to do those things and only those things that gave me joy, that put a smile on my face, and then leave the rest to somebody else. You know, technically, I could have done drama, you know. I have a degree in performance studies. Forget it. I was happy and pleased with Nikki. I was like, please knock yourself out. So I would really suggest no more than three subjects and probably keep it to two. Get together with a group of people and then start farming some of this stuff out.
Now that implies that hopefully there are people in Worcester who have the skills to do the teaching in specific subjects. And part of what your vision must be is to network with these people and to bring them in as needed.
Yes, that's the beauty of Teachers of the Nations, because we get people who come in and just ask to teach. Krista and Craig McLaughlin have come in every 2 years and taught music in the summer. You know, I've got another lady coming from Canada in about 3 months. So we get people. Rachel was also a teacher. We get people. Elcha DeHaan taught for us for a while, also a certified teacher. So we get people just on the basis of the organization, Teachers of the Nations, that are qualified to teach. And the beauty then in that is that someone can come along and help. Tanya, who came twice and helped us, also a certified teacher, which allowed us then to give a lot of one-on-one service to our students. So what would need to happen here is that as people come in and they say, hey, we would like to teach, then generally, you are here for about 90 days. That's the general amount that people get a visa for a visitor's visa. Then we would say, for these 3 months, wow, we've got somebody who's come from Greece. Is there anybody here who would like to learn Greek or Latin or whatever? Then we could offer those kind of specialized classes that you wouldn't ordinarily get. You've got your degree from Cambridge in engineering. Okay, so now we've got somebody here who can do these experiments, who can teach science. So we would definitely use the connections that come through Teachers of the Nations and also come through YWAM. People come to YWAM and they're looking for opportunities to teach. Let me just stop here for a minute. Tutoring and teaching are not the same things. Okay? They're looking for opportunities to teach. And then when they say that, then immediately the person who organizes and coordinates outside ministry, who is also does music with our girls, Christine Runrick, she'll say, well, have you thought of Teachers of the Nations? Have you thought of Masterpiece Academy? And then we're able to pull people in for the seasons that they're here. Now, if they're here with YWAM, they might be here for 3 years. So it could be a long-term thing. But the shortest term that you're looking at is probably a three-month period. And people can come in and teach. And that's an opportunity for people to give to the community. Because this is not a money-making racket. I mean, you know, because you've been with us almost since the beginning, Masterpiece never turned a profit. It was never about turning a profit. It was about helping remediate and get students back on level so that they could be successful. So getting people into the community is really important. It's very easy to get stuck on the base and not really know what Wooster is about. But most of our children came from Zola Timba, the Black Township. We had some from Avian Park, some from Riverview. So you get a nice flavor about what Wooster is about and the people are like. Yeah.
Maybe there's somebody, or lots of people, hopefully, listening to this, either live or later, and they say, oh, she's talking to me. I've got those skills. What do they do next? How do they get in touch?
Well, the nicest thing, easiest thing to do is go to Facebook, and you can link with us at Teachers of the Nations, or you can link with us at Masterpiece Academy. Drop me a note. Tell me of your interest, what the subject matters that you teach, and how long you're able to stay. And then we go from there.
And Masterpiece, of course, is like as in war and peace, not in bits and pieces.
Yes, so. P-E-A-C-E, because the Master of Peace is Jesus. And it's his academy. It's his school. It's his way of doing things. And yes, we welcome everyone. We've had some people who've come who have been struggling with their faith. But from the outset, we must let anybody who comes know Jesus is at the center of all that we do and that he begins and ends everything.
What a good place to end this interview. Thank you, Mela, so much. I wish I could say that I'll see you again in 2 years, but we won't be here.
But we thank you for all that you and Lorianne have done, and only the Lord can repay you. I saw one of the parents, and she was saying that Kanyo and Umpo, she was saying that they still talk about you. And so, yes, your reward is in heaven, and your legacy lives on.
Well, I'm very excited to hear about the new Masterpiece Academy. It's great. Let's get the word out.
Thank you so much.
Now, let's go back 2 years to when I first interviewed Mela, and she told me all about this school that I had just joined as a science teacher, and Lorianne had joined to teach art. And we're going to start with a couple of short interviews with two of the students, Umpo and Kanyo. Kanyo and Umpo are students at Masterpiece Academy. Kanyo is 10 and Umpo is 8, and it's a joy for me to teach them. So I asked them a few questions about how much they enjoy school. We first spoke to Umpo and then to Kanyo. Good morning, Umpo.
Hello.
So which is your favorite subject?
Our dance.
Do you enjoy coming to school?
Yes.
When you finish school, would you like to go to university?
Yes.
Do you like swimming?
Yes.
I think you're going swimming today, aren't you? Good morning, Kanyo. You're also a student at Masterpiece Academy here in Worcester. The subjects that you're learning, they include social studies, maths, art, Afrikaans, German, French, English, and science. Now, do you enjoy learning these subjects at school?
Yes.
Is there one of them which you enjoy more than the others?
Maths.
You're a maths person. That's wonderful, because we really need more people in the world who can do maths properly. What do you like about maths? What's particularly your favorite thing about maths?
Times table.
Are you good at it?
Yes.
What's 5 times 2?
10.
There we are. Any other subjects that you particularly like at school?
Art.
Art. Have you got a favorite artist?
Yes.
Who's that?
Vincent van Gogh.
Van Gogh. My goodness, my wife Lorianne would like you for that, because she loves Van Gogh as well. Yeah. Tell me this. Would you prefer to stay at home, or would you prefer to come to school each day?
Come to school each day.
Have you decided what you would like to be when you grow up?
A diver.
A diver? Diving for anything particular?
Diving in the pool.
In the pool? What about in the ocean?
No.
There's treasure in the ocean, you know. Would you be wearing special diving equipment?
Yes.
What are you going to be doing after school today?
Do my homework.
Do you enjoy learning about the world? Can you?
Yes.
Who created the world?
God.
Does he love you?
Yes.
You're sure of that?
Yes.
That's fine. Nothing else really matters, does it? I've really enjoyed talking to you this morning on this radio program. And I wish you well at Masterpiece Academy.
Thanks.
We've heard from two of the students at Masterpiece Academy. I'd like to introduce you to the principal and founder of Masterpiece Academy, Dr. Mella Davis. Thank you for joining us here on CWCP Radio.
Thank you for your gracious invitation.
How long ago was the school founded?
The school began in August of 2017. Actually, the vision for the school began in 2011 during a summer outreach trip that I took to Kenya. And I was involved in a church planting venture. And every afternoon, a group of us would go to schools and also share. And this one particular afternoon, I was invited to share at an all-girls school in Kenya. And the Lord asked me to ask the girls, it was about a simile of about 300 to 400 girls, how many of them believed they had the same worth and value as a boy. And about 3 or 4 girls' hands went up. And it was at that moment God said to me, this is what I want you to do. I want you to build schools to educate girls. So the Lord gave me the vision in 2011. By 2012, I had left the United States and all of my teaching engagements at the time in the States. I was teaching at Belhaven University part-time and then also working at high school as a department chair for foreign languages and teaching English. So I left all of that behind and came to Worcester, South Africa, and took a course called SOAP, the School of Apostolic Pioneering, to help me get a vision of how to put the school on the ground. And from there, I established Teachers of the Nations, which is the ministry arm under which Masterpiece Academy sort of lives. Began working with girls in Avian Park with the eye to eventually opening a school, a boarding school specifically, that would take girls out of impoverished townships and educate them. And Masterpiece is basically the first step in that.
And now, Chapter 10 of Legacy, the launch of a generational business chamber, the struggle to significance journey of a business. If you've been listening to the previous 10 chapters of Legacy, which we have featured on different editions of the Worcester Report, you may be interested to hear that the whole book is available on Amazon, not just in Kindle format, but now in audio format via Audible. And the recordings are the exact recordings that you've been hearing here on the Worcester Report. I'm delighted to have been part of this exercise of bringing this important book to a wider range of audio listeners. Legacy, Chapter 10, Launch of a Generational Business Chamber. The Struggle to Significance Journey of a Business. Any individual serious about taking their family on the journey from struggle to significance to make the transition from a one-generational mindset family to a three-generational mindset family will sooner or later have to become skilled in all aspects of business. No matter how big the job title and company perks, or how much you earn as a specialist selling your time, none of this is transferable to future generations. Only by having a business or businesses built on sound values, systems and processes around long-term profitable products and services, or by having invested into such businesses, will the individual have something that can be transferred or bequeathed to their children. Imagine the bewilderment of individuals who now want to enter the world of business, only to find themselves confronted with an onslaught of new technology and information of which they have no way of making sense or knowing what is important and relevant or not, such as the complex world of corporate business, trying to balance human resource issues with marketing and selling, production, cash flow and funding options, regulatory requirements, BEE conditions, competition in the marketplace, paying taxes and keeping shareholders happy. The different types of legal entities and to know which structure is the correct one for the business. The studying of future trends and positioning the business in advance to benefit from potential disruptive technologies. Dealing with uncontrollable external factors such as new and often economically damaging government regulations, unforeseen and drastic increases in tariffs, electricity, estate duties and taxes, minimum wages, etc. Or economic factors such as the credit rating of a country which drastically impacts on a business's ability to raise funding. Dealing with debtors and delinquent payers and the litigation that often follows that process. Dealing with insurance issues that can range from taking forward cover on imports to insuring of plant and equipment and the lives of key individuals. Paying VAT and keeping SARS and the economy happy with all the compulsory taxes. Just looking at the few issues mentioned above, it is fair to ask why anyone in their right mind would want to put themselves through so much pain. Add to the above complexities the fact that most people entering the world of business do so from necessity and not because they desire to be business people or have any entrepreneurial skill. For example, they got retrenched or retired and there's not enough money to fund the individual's basic lifestyle requirements, and so they buy a franchise or a shop or manufacturing facility. Or their children cannot find a job, so let's help them start a business, whilst all they want is to earn a salary and have security. The majority of small businesses are created just to survive and not to thrive. While the actual statistics can't be verified, it is a fair estimate that 80% of new businesses fail within the first 18 months. Of those that make it past this initial period, a further 90%, as 18% of the remaining 20%, is in survival mode, whilst only an estimated 2% will have grown to be successful enterprises by the end of 5 years, some of which eventually get listed with big paydays for the original owners. Yes, you read correctly. Less than 2% of businesses might grow to be successful past 5 years. The reason for this almost pessimistic outlook on business in general
is not to put you off on starting your own family business, but to make sure that you're aware of the consequences of trying to do your business from a one-generational mindset. There is a better way. Just as individuals can choose to take their family on the journey from struggle to significance and bring their family to the three-generational mindset and manifestation of abundance and prosperity, in the same way, a business has a journey from struggle to significance, and as a reward for completing this journey, will experience abundance and sustainable, growing income and longevity. In this chapter, we will attempt to provide business owners with a new generational perspective for their business that should make the journey more rewarding and worthwhile. Struggle phase. Characteristics. Negative cash flow. Income, I, less expenses, E, remains minus. Face the continuous threat of failure and closure with the commensurate loss of owners' or shareholders' capital. As it is true for the struggle phase of an individual, it is also true for the struggle phase of a business. Regardless of how much money was originally invested or how many people are employed, if the business stays in the minus phase too long, the capital will soon be consumed, the business will have to close, and all the employees will lose their jobs. The only way out is for the business owner or owners to rebalance this equation and turn the minus into a plus. To do this, they will have to find ways to increase income and or reduce expenses, cost of operations. Increase income. Increase sales, unless you are currently selling your products or services at a loss. Find new products or services to complement your existing range. Utilize the current overhead structures better. Restructure your shareholding in order to bring in more share capital. This is only a correct option if the new shareholder also brings other business value to the business besides capital. Increase the value of the existing products and services through better branding or adding new features that allows one to charge a premium. Reduce expenses. See if there are ways to reduce some of the existing operational costs. For example, rental of premises, move to cheaper premises, or work from home. Salaries and wages. Increase productivity by paying more per productive employee and reduce the overall number of employees by letting the unproductive ones go. Let go of products and services causing a loss. Outsource where possible to move some salary items from fixed cost to variable cost. Rent equipment rather than buy new ones. Emotionally. Every stage of a business's life cycle can be lonely if the owner does not consciously seek an environment of support. It is most often during this stage that the business owner feels overwhelmed by all the challenges faced on a daily basis. Part of this sense of being overwhelmed arises from not really being prepared to manage all the aspects of a business. The owner's primary skill and passion may relate to one of the aspects of business, for example, technical, production, finances, or marketing. The lack of understanding or lack of finance soon forces the owner to take on roles out of his depth. This then starts to consume all his available energy and time, and due to being incompetent or not gifted in these areas, the business steadily deteriorates, or at best stagnates, and soon the owner becomes a slave to a business that he no longer enjoys. Most business owners don't know what they don't know. Even if the owner could afford the fees for a professional person, like an accountant or lawyer or consultant, unless the right questions are asked of the accountant or lawyer, or the consultant is given the correct brief, money will be wasted and the business will still not be further on the road to success. The best a business owner can do during this phase of the business's life cycle is to get into a support environment of like-minded business owners committed to moving their businesses to the next levels of stability, success, and significance. The first layer of support must come from your local gig. This is where the like-minded gig members in the same location get together once a month to share investment ideas and work on joint investment projects. Once there are a few gigs in the same suburb or town, they can consider to organize themselves as a local community chamber of commerce. Stability phase. Characteristic. Positive cash flow. Income I less expenses E equals positive. The owner is complacent and runs the risk of falling back into struggle unless the business grows to the success phase. General comments. The positive cash flow might be due to high profit margins. The success of this venture will, however, soon attract competition, and unless the owner knows how to keep repositioning key products or services, cash flow will soon be under attack. The success of the business is most often built around the skill and drive of the owner. Unless the owner is aware of the potential bottleneck in the business's future growth, the business may soon stagnate and lose quality people who feel their growth potential to be stifled. Linked to the point above, the business may not have proper systems and procedures in place to allow it to duplicate itself in other regions or markets. The business may currently fill a niche market with its products or services, but unless it keeps improving or branches into further products or services, it runs the risk of being taken out of business in the future through disruptive technology. Emotionally. For the present, the owner might be in a good place, and deservedly so, but the saying still applies to this kind of business owner. You don't know what you don't know. It is highly recommended that this owner enters into an environment that challenges conventional thinking and is exposed to new ideas and technology. Although the owner might be content in terms of cash flow for the time being, the frustration may be in having bigger ideas for the business but not knowing how to get it there, especially when he is doing everything just to maintain the current level of business. Part of the problem may be in feeling overprotective over the business, like a parent over a baby. By not being willing to release some control or even equity, the potential growth of the business might become stifled. It is strongly advisable that this owner starts to assemble a competent board to take the business to the next level. Through the Community Chamber of Commerce, the business owner will have access to a virtual board of competent professionals. Success phase. Characteristics. Your main business is established, ready for national rollout, franchising, or listing. The owner has used the momentum of the main business to branch out into at least two other businesses or opened new markets. General comment. A business owner should stay in this phase. He has paid the price, the right systems and procedures have been developed to allow the handover of the daily operations to management, thus freeing up time to pursue new opportunities. This is the time to explore the possibility to take the current business success as a prototype and to branch out as either a national brand or franchise. Think three-generational and ensure the future longevity of the business. Prepare it for listing. This unlocks value for the family, which can be reinvested into new ventures, but also gives access to greater capital resources that open up even more opportunities. Emotionally, the owner is in a good place and deservedly so. The important test is whether the family is a part of this journey. It is sad to see business owners achieving material success only to end up divorced or suffering from poor health. This is a critical time to attend to the succession plan in all business ventures. Having become a specialist in the chosen field of business, in order to stay relevant, the owner needs to empower others. He can now invest his experience and combine it with the energy and passion of up-and-coming entrepreneurs and do this by taking equity in their businesses. Although respecting money and resources, the business owner becomes more focused on community issues and finds that personal motivation and passion is starting to shift away from his own achievements to how he can empower others. Such a person is invaluable to the community, and in the Community Chamber of Commerce, these individuals are given opportunities to start impacting the community. Significance phase. This is what every business owner should strive for, but sadly few attain. Characteristics. Be a positive economic driver and change agent in the community. General comment. This is achieved by providing a positive and sustainable impact to shareholders, community, family, and the economy, local and national. The company has clear systems and procedures and has succession plans in place. It channels some of its profits into the ongoing training and upliftment of its personnel and creating and encouraging a work culture of entrepreneurship. It now has the resources to provide resources for social projects in a sustainable manner. The business owner is regarded as a leader and role model in the business community and takes time out to mentor young business owners and entrepreneurs. The company channels some of its profits into funding new ventures from budding entrepreneurs. Advice on this business journey from struggle to significance. If you want to travel fast, travel alone. If you want to travel far, travel with others. In the early stage of your business journey, avoid spending unnecessary resources on trying to perfect your product, service, or brand. Understand the powerful concept of MVP, Minimum Viable Product. What is that first minimum viable product that you can sell and start getting cash flow going? Once you find this minimum viable product, start the process to tweak it to make it more valuable and even grow it into more products and services. Learn about the different options of funding your business and use the best one or combinations thereof for where your business is in that specific moment. Shareholders' funds, equity. This is the sum of all the money invested by yourself and other shareholders in the project. This money is invested at zero interest and could be lost by the shareholders if the project or business fails. To compensate them for the risk they are taking, they normally receive a proportionate number of shares in the business. This is called their equity or shareholding in the business. The bigger the amount of share capital available at the start of a project, the easier it is on the cash flow of the business. This is, however, an expensive way to fund the business in the long term, since it becomes increasingly more expensive to buy out a shareholder as the business becomes more and more successful over time. Loan capital. This includes all the capital borrowed from outside investors who may or may not be part of the business. The riskier a business is being perceived, the higher the interest that might have to be paid to the lenders. This interest to be paid is also referred to as the cost of capital. Although this might be harder on the cash flow of a business in the beginning, it might be a cheaper and more cost-effective option in the long run. A business should avoid taking on too much loan capital or debt, since it places a big burden on the cash flow needs of a business. Sweat equity. This is similar to the concept of shareholders' funds or equity, with the difference that the shareholder does not put actual money into the business, but exchanges skills or actual time worked in the business for shareholding in the business. Barter. This is a variation on sweat equity, but in this case, the parties barter with one another and offer an exchange of products or services in order to achieve a new business outcome that would be of greater benefit than if both parties kept their assets or products and services for themselves. A good example is how the Four Ways Community Chamber of Commerce started. I met Trevor Nell through our local gym and learned that he is a serial entrepreneur with a proven track record of turning businesses around and taking them to listings, as well as succeeding in various community empowerment initiatives, just the man to help launch the Four Ways Community Chamber of Commerce. Fortunately for me, he owned a training company, Wisdoms, and was looking for a venue from where he could experiment with some training courses he intended to launch on adult training. We in turn owned a guest house and conference center, where the conference center had about 80% spare capacity. The bartering that took place between us was that Eagle's Nest will give the Saturday morning away at no cost so that Wisdoms could offer an adult training program to the public. Wisdoms will provide training and do marketing for its program that will attract the feet to visit the premises and discover the facilities that are available at Eagle's Nest. Out of this bartering process that took place in October 2016, a series of activities was launched by Eagle's Nest, Gig, and Wisdoms that have culminated in the launch of the Four Ways Community Chamber of Commerce in January 2017. Loan Link Share, LLS. This is a unique financial product available to paid members of the Gig CFI. See www.gig.coop. whereby members could access zero-interest loans that could be used to pay off high-interest-bearing loans and credit cards, fund business expenses such as equipment or working capital, invest into income-producing assets and build your family wealth-producing engine, example, buy property and repay the loan over 84 months at the same installment that it would have been if the house was bonded by a commercial bank over 20 years. The formula for unlimited business opportunities. P squared minus P divided by 2 equals S, where P equals people of like minds and S equals synergistic relationships, translating into bankable business opportunities. This formula describes the powerful synergy that can be created if a group of like-minded people get together regularly in an atmosphere of trust and an abundance mindset to share business ideas and their resources of skills and networks. Say a group of 10 friends meet regularly to discuss and share business opportunities with each other. P equals 10, P squared equals 10 times 10. P squared minus P equals 10 times 10 minus 10 equals 100 minus 10 equals 90. 90 divided by 2 equals 45, equals synergistic relationships, or the potential number of profitable business ideas that can be uncovered by those 10 people. Some of these ideas could even grow to become public listed companies. What could happen if we grow this group of 10 to 20? P equals 20, P squared equals 20 times 20 equals 400. P squared minus P equals 400 minus 20 equals 380. 380 divided by 2 equals 190 equals synergistic relationships. The following table illustrates the exponential power of economical synergy if we could get this number of like-minded people to collaborate and share ideas together. On a piece of paper, draw a table with two columns. The headings of the columns are P equals question mark and number of synergistic relationships or bankable business opportunities. And then the following rows, the first figure coming under the first column and the second figure coming under the second column. 10, 45, 20, 190, 30, 885, 40, 1,580. 50, 2,475, 100, 4,950, 200, 19,950, 500, 124,750, 1,000, 499,500, 2,000, 1,999,000, 5,000, 12,497,500. 10,000, 499,500. Wow! Just imagine the possibilities. If we can find and mobilize 10,000 like-minded people, three generational thinkers, we could wipe out unemployment and poverty in South Africa and provide every person, even from birth, with a successful business. This powerful formula, together with the simple three-generational message in this book, holds the key to revolutionize the economics of this world. It is our sincere wish that by reading this book and applying its principles in your family, that you too will join us in this movement and become one of these like-minded people. Organizational structure and legal entities. Do not get too concerned with the organizational and legal structure of your business until you have proven that you have a commercially sustainable product or service that the market wants and is willing to pay for. In building your organizational structure, find the right people. Right, when it comes to people and employees, is more a function of attitude and character than it is about skills. In protecting your business and ensuring that your intellectual property is protected and your business continues after your death, the legal form of a trust will certainly have to feature in your planning. A trust, however, is there to protect assets and not to trade in. For that, you should use a company, or PTY Limited, in South Africa. Another business entity that could be considered is a cooperative. A cooperative is quick and relatively cheap to set up. It requires a minimum of 5 members. It has become a buzzword among South African politicians to promote this form of business structure as if the structure alone will solve unemployment problems. Unless the members of a cooperative are serious about business and complement each other in skills and contribution, it can quickly create a very unhappy environment. Another option is to go it alone as a sole proprietor. Although a sole proprietor is considered a legal entity, it is not considered the right entity for your family business, since it will die with you and, from a three-generational perspective, is not transferable. It might serve a purpose in order to open a bank account and start up a business until you're convinced you have a workable entity. Stay lean. Reinvest profits into growing the business in terms of better marketing, products, and quality people before you start eating the profits for personal lifestyle. Where possible, outsource product support and services to outside companies to minimize fixed overheads. Fixed overheads include money spent on salaries and wages, rental of premises, and company perks. Business Advisory Board. If you want to grow a sustainable and expanding business that can be turned into a franchise or taken to listing, then bring in a board as soon as possible. You may be the owner and decision maker, but you don't know everything. Owners are often so close to the situation that they can't see the real challenge and end up treating a symptom rather than the main cause. The way you have started up by bringing in friends and family to keep costs low and help the family is often a reason why the company can't grow further. Some of these people may have become deadwood and are slowing the company down, but you are too close emotionally to do what is necessary and fire them. A board member must be chosen on the basis that he will bring expertise, networks, and potential resources to the table. The Community Chamber of Commerce offers a virtual board service to its members where, for a nominal cost per month or session, the business owner can get input from the best specialists in the country. Quality networks. Successful business owners have cultivated and built and continue to maintain networks of quality people. These networks are based on real relationships developed over time. The members of a quality relationship network understand each other's businesses and are constantly on the lookout to refer business the other person's way. Purpose. Three-generational succession, listing, national brand, franchising, etc. Since this book is about the three-generational journey of the individual and his business, it needs some further clarifying comments with regard to the purpose of business. People build businesses. Businesses don't build people. Don't ever let the success or failure of a business venture become your identity. The reality is that you only build successful and sustainable businesses by failing forward in a systematic way. Building your business well and sustainably and keeping it growing is part of the success phase of the journey and not your significance. This does not mean that some people cannot find their significance in building more businesses and creating more employment. This, then, does not make them greedy capitalists. It's the way they express their significance. To one-generational business owners, the purpose for being in business and building it successfully in their lifetimes could be to survive, replace a salary, create employment and income for the family, build it to sell and cash in. For three-generational business owners, their focus should be on how to ensure that the business will still be there for the generation of their grandchildren. How can this be achieved in a fast-changing environment where technology can disrupt whole industries? Maybe we should learn from the Japanese on this topic. The oldest running hotel in operation is not in Paris or London or Rome. It is, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, in Yamanashi, Japan, a hot spring hotel called Nishiyama Onsen Keiunkan, which has existed since the year 705. The second oldest is another Japanese hot springs hotel, Hoshi Ryokan, founded in 718. But it isn't just the world's two oldest hotels. Japan is home to the world's oldest lots of things. Sudo Honki, the world's oldest sake brewer, has been around since 1141. Before being absorbed into a subsidiary in 2006, the oldest continuously operating family business in the world was Kongo Gumi, which built temples and had been doing so for 14 centuries. The list goes on and includes Yamanashi Prefecture Company, which has been making goods for home Buddhist altars and clothing for monks since 1024. Ichimojiwa Wasuki, Japan's oldest confectionery company, founded in 1000. Nakamura Shaji, a Buddhist temple and Shinto shrine construction company that dates back to 970. And Kyoto-based Tanaka Iga, which has been making Buddhist goods since 885. The infusion of literal new blood into old family businesses ensures that ancient firms can keep evolving. Ostensibly, it's not surprising that an old country with an old economy would be home to so many old businesses. Many of the oldest companies are local and family-owned, such as sake brewers and inns, or ryokan, that were established for traders in the 8th century along the route from Tokyo to Kyoto. Even before it became the first non-Western, non-Christian country to industrialize in the 1870s, Japan boasted a well-developed agricultural economy with rather sophisticated urban populations, says Hugh Patrick, director of Columbia Business School Center on Japanese Economy and Business. This semi-elite urban class provided a strong consumer base. But that only explains how the companies were established early on, not necessarily how they have managed to last. One factor was the right of primogeniture, says David Weinstein, professor of the Japanese economy at Columbia University. Because the eldest son inherited all of a patriarch's wealth, companies in Japan could be passed on entirely to a single member of the family. Even though primogeniture faded with the 20th century, owners still often pass their companies on to a single heir, although keeping business in the family is often aided and abetted by adult adoption, in which the company head legally adopts the right person to run his firm and then passes it on. These adult adoptions are sometimes facilitated by a marriage between the heir presumptive and the owner's daughter. In 2011, more than 90% of the 81,000 individuals adopted in Japan were adults. Firms run by adopted heirs, research shows, outperform those run by blood heirs, and both adopted and blood heirs outperform non-family firms. The infusion of literal new blood into old family businesses ensures that the nation's ancient firms can keep evolving. The proof is in the pudding. Most of Japan's oldest companies are family-owned. Weinstein points to the robust example of Sumitomo and Mitsui, both centuries old, which merged to become the multinational SMBC, Japan's second largest bank. Perhaps most famously, there is Nintendo, which started out as a playing card maker in the 1800s and managed to metamorphosize into an iconic consumer electronics company while remaining a continuously owned family concern. Hugh Whitaker of the University of Oxford's Nissan Institute of Japanese Studies says that such businesses strike a delicate balance between continuation and innovation, a line they have walked for centuries. The logic of doing business in Japan is a logic of commitment rather than a logic of choice, Whitaker says, stressing that owners privilege longevity over the present moment. In other words, Japan's business culture is not one to obsess over quarterly reports. Family-owned enterprises are always going to have a lot more persistence, Weinstein says. They continue in the same sense that the name continues. It is therefore clear that during the three-generational life of a family business, circumstances may dictate that the family management at that time may have to merge or bring in innovation, ensuring that the momentum of the family business is not lost. Even if the business owners decide to list the company, it can be done in a way that the benefit of that listing continues to be available for the grandchildren, for example, keeping shares in a trust for the grandchildren. Conclusion. If you are serious about taking your family on this three-generational journey from struggle to significance, it is inevitable that your family, too, will have to branch out in business. Don't be intimidated by this thought. Embrace it and discover how you will accelerate your three-generational journey. If you are really serious about accelerating your family's generational journey, join your local community chamber of commerce and start a local gig. In closing this chapter, I want to share what I believe is the one most important trait of any successful entrepreneur. Persist, persist, persist. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence, determination, and hard work makes the difference. President Coolidge.
Koppel's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Well, thank you for being with us on this edition of the Worcester Reports. Working as a teacher in Masterpiece Academy has been pure joy for me. And as we get ready to leave South Africa in 4 months, I am delighted at the new plans that Dr. Mala Davis has for the school. And I think that it's going to continue to have quite an influence on education here in Worcester. Wishing her and you and all the students, particularly Kanyo and Umpo, in case they get to hear this, all the best for the future. God bless you.